in leadership of this process, it's going to be a rightward movement, an anti-communist movement, regardless of the NAM, if we do want to separate for the moment, the NAM forces or the financier forces. You know, because they don't want to develop no progressive movement either.
Yeah, I think if anything was ever part of the dirt pile that the comrade in the back was talking about yesterday, the Democratic Party has got to be a substantial part of that. And, you know, there's a point, briefly, that I'd like to mention about that was in this comrade's paper about the Progressive Party being used to take forces out of the Democratic Party, split them off, isolate them, and destroy their effectiveness. And, I mean, I think as we develop our strategy and tactics in relation to this movement, that's something we're going to have to be very careful about. I mean, there are certain forces that we'd be perfectly happy to see outside of the Democratic Party, and that we cannot see is that these forces lead the forces that we are also
Smedley
attempting.
Reporting. Uh-huh. Well, whenever there's an upsurge of oppressed people, women are thrown up into the cultural. Otherwise, in our society, they were mute. They had no speech or no.
Josephine Herbst, Muriel Rukeyser, the poet Mary Heaton Vorse, right down the line. And there was you. Is you, I should say.
Well, you many see? Of them, Josephine Herbst practically died of starvation in a Pennsylvania farm. Writers took up money. You know, she was unknown, unpublished. Now there's a book being written about her, but those women were lost women, too.
Yeah, Eleanor Langer doing a book about her. About Josephine Herbst. You know what would be good? We've neglected your poetry. I mean, your poetry direct. And here you have three. You have poems by Korn, of course, The Origins of Korn, Sayings, Writings, and Rites, the title, Rites of Ancient Ripening, mm-hmm. which in a sense is what the title of your book is. Your book is Ripening.
Yeah, I wrote that first about an older woman and death.
Why don't you read, perhaps, these poems?
Well, that's quite long.
Well, you choose. There's one here.
I'd like to read the ending here about women, I think. This I wrote for the Vietnamese Women's Union during the war, but it applies to all women. And it applies to El Salvador or Nicaragua, the struggle of women. Women of the earth, bear the weight of the oppressor, bearing us down into deep to glow upward from the dark, from the womb, from the abyss of blood, from the injured scream. From below we glow and rise singing. I saw the women of the earth rising on horizons of nitrogen. I saw the women of the earth coming toward each other with praise and heat without reservations of space. All shining in a light and solidarity, transforming the wound into bread and children. In a new abundance, a global summer, tall and crying out in song, we arise in mass meadows. We will run to the living hills with our seed. We will redeem all hostages. We will light the bowl of life. We will light singing across all seas the resonance of the song of women, lifted green, alive in the solidarity of the communal love, uncovering the illumined fruit, the flying pollen, in the thighs of golden bees. We bring to you our fire. We pledge to you our guerrilla fight against the predators of our country. We come with thunder, lightning on our skin. Roaring wombs singing, our sisters singing, choruses of millions singing.
Beautiful. I can think of your, of course, they will ask you, quite obviously, Meredith, you read this poem the way you did with such fervor. Whence your vitality? That's the question no doubt is asked you. Your vitality.
I think it comes from allying myself with other people. I never went with the private individual poet of my time, you know, who was like T.S. Eliot. I think when T.S. Eliot's poem was published in 1923, it was
the
a
wasteland.
Great... Wasteland was a blow to my generation.
Why was that?
Well, William Carlos Williams told him later that it was preparation for the bomb. He says you go out with a whimper.
Yeah. Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
The hollow men. He didn't say anything about hollow women. But this was a blow
round
to my,
women.
My generation. Yeah. That poem was a terrible blow up to...
Well, it's not going to be a whimper now. It seems to me there's an anti-nuclear movement getting underway. So.
Well, it's the whole attitude of is the death...
Yeah.
Death...
Yeah.
So I think my vitality, or whatever you call it, comes from my attaching myself to the great artery always of the people and the struggles of the people.
You say the great artery is a phrase you use, and it's communal sensibility.
Yes.
Is one of your phrases.
And that's what the plant grows from. That's what all nature grows from. It doesn't grow from individual, sickened individuals.
So we come back again, don't we? We come back again to the interconnection, the relationship. As an Indian speaks of a rock, it's not the noun rock, but what a rock does, good or bad.
Yes, what is
how
your relationship
used.
Is.
And so we come to the circular aspect again. That, by the way, if we may, could we come back to that again? Because that, to me, is incredible.
The straight line also leads to the cancer. I mean, nothing doubles in nature but the cancer. I mean, that's a symbol of our life and the... I mean, I think it's necessary to our survival to change the linear to the cyclical.
So it's women and cycle, isn't it, too?
Well, women represent the cyclical that has been trashed. The patriarchal world did away with women.
So, this is the introduction by your editor, Elaine Hedges of the Feminist Press. In the introduction, this very thing you're talking about. Nevertheless, writes Elaine Hedges, one reads Le Sueur's recent works with intense interest in her ideas and deep admiration for indomitable energy and faith. And what she said in Crusaders in 1955 of a mother, her mother, Marion Wharton, she had the courage to leap into new forms. Here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
You're leaping into a new form in writing. Applies even more to Le Sueur herself. In the 1930s, she created a body of literature about women that insensitively recording their lives showed respect for their unique experiences. She wrote The Culture of Poor Women, The Psychology and Sexuality of Both Working and Middle Class Women, and Ways in Which Women Experience, and here's that cycle, experience adolescence, marriage, pregnancy, childbirth, death of children, widowhood, both in the 30s and later decades, and often well before they became topics of widespread social literary concern. Mm. This is you now being prescient. She wrote about American Indians, immigrant women, older women, the mother-daughter relationship, that's Persephone and Demeter, women uniting with other women, and ecology. And so, and of course, the anonymous, inarticulate women.
Mm.
And of course, you give them voice.
Yes. It's probably one of the great things of my starting to write when I was about 12. I felt women were mute. My grandmother had no voice. Didn't know her life. She wouldn't even tell her life. I think it was one of the things I began to write, to give voice and tongue to women.
So you were about 12 then.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sensed this. I mean, you sensed that.
I could see it.
In fact, when you went east to study to be an actress... You did originally. You went east to be an actor at the American Academy of Arts.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother, I suppose, because she didn't, wasn't able to experience certain things, did it in a surrogate way through you.
Yes.
Was that the idea? What do you think, Meredith, there's so much richness in your book, I don't know which part to choose now for you to read near the end of this hour. Ripening is a book I can't recommend too highly, nor can Blanche Gelfand, the New York Times critic, nor can Grace Paley nor Tilly Olson, all of whom have been affected by Meridell. She'll be appearing, if I remind the audience again, at the Guild Bookstore. And you got to meet her, by the way. And you might autograph a book or two.
Right.
And you'll do a reading that night. It's 1118 West Armitage. And it's Saturday, this Saturday, April 3rd at 1 o'clock, and you'll do a reading later on. What is something, I was going to say, what base... haven't we touched? We touched quite a few, but they're a good number. Your journalism, your being in Minnesota, there now. Now I guess the Milwaukee Journal will praise you, do they not? Now.
I don't know. I doubt it.
Oh, I think so.
Oh, I get a little bit uneasy when I'm praised by the wrong people.
Well, isn't it possible that they may have caught up to some extent and want to give them benefit of the doubt?
I think the attack upon publishing is becoming more intense.
The attack on publishing is,
well, that's
yes.
what you write. No. I mean, what you write. Now, you heard about they're going to shred books?
Oh, I think they're doing it already.
They're doing it, yes.
Yeah. For those who do know, this has nothing to do with the blacklist. This is an overall blacklist against all writers, no matter who they are. If a book isn't selling too well and has taken up space and they become remainders quickly, I assume only for the remainder is sold almost for nothing. But in this case, they're starting to shred them or to burn them because they're taking up too much space. And so
and
you
taxes,
may find it difficult to find a book you like today that's very good but isn't selling too well. You might not get a copy of that at all a year from now.
And the last publisher that was holding out, they're all owned by the military and
certain ones, conglomerates, military, a few independents.
There was, I would like to know one. I mean, I don't know who, except the anti-establishment press.
Oh, fair enough.
I think Vonnegut said that writers might refuse to give their books to military publishers or to...
You know what would be good? I like this poem. Have you ever seen? I Light Your Streets, one of the three poems. I Light Your Streets, this woman.
I am a crazy woman with a painted face on the streets of Gallup. I invite men into my grave for a little wine. I am a painted grave, owl woman, hooting for callers in the night, black bats over the sun singing to me. The horned toad sleeps in my thighs. My grandmothers gave me songs to heal. But the white man buys me cheap without song or word. My dead children appear and I play with them, ridge of time in my grief, remembering who will claim the ruins and the graves and the corn maiden violated as the land. I'm a child in my eroded dust. I remember feathers of a hummingbird and the virgin corn laughing on the cob. Maize, defend me. Prairie wheel around me. I run beneath the guns and the greedy eye, and hurricanes of white faces knife me. But like fox and smoke, I gleam among the thrushes and light your streets.
I gleam among the thrushes and light your streets. Well, that's you, Meredith Lessard. And I thank you very much for being the writer you are and for your influence on
and
me.
And I thank you for enduring so well and so beautifully.
And may I just remind the audience again of the book Ripening, and it's Feminist Press, and you've got to get it to read it. It's beautiful, out loud reading, too, as you can gather. Selected works of Meredith Lessard from 1927 to 1980. And thank you very much indeed, Meredith. In her appearance tomorrow at the Guild Bookstore on West Armitage at 1 o'clock and then a reading that night. By the way, I forgot to say, Meredith is a great-grandmother, and she has 16 great-grandchildren. She's writing now more than ever, 8 to 10 hours a day, so she defies the calendar. Again, comes to her defiance of a linear approach to life. So she, my guest this morning. After we hear from Don Tate, a word about Monday's guests.
You can see familiar Chicago Symphony Orchestra players in unfamiliar roles tomorrow night when a special midnight special takes place from the stage of Orchestra Hall. As part of a gala evening benefiting this year's WFMT Chicago Symphony Marathon, you'll see the following groups: the C.S. Okies, the Country Western and Bluegrass Band with 8 Chicago Symphony musicians, the Wolfgang Barbershop Quartet with 4 symphony members, a German Oompa Band with 5 brass and wind players, and the jazz group Ears, which includes Dale Clevenger and Larry Combs. In addition, Corky Siegel with piano and harmonica will present blues, Fred Holstein will offer folk music, and there will be humor from such musical dignitaries as Leonard Slatkin and Robert C. Marsh. And finally, David Schrader will do his ragtime piano version of Tristan und Isolde. You can tune into all of this tomorrow night at 10:30 on WFMT, but better yet, be in the audience. Tax-deductible tickets are $25, and they include a wine and cheese party after the program. For tickets, visit the Symphony Marathon office at 224 South Michigan or pick them up at Orchestra Hall tomorrow night. The phone number for further information is 435-8285. Studs?
Well, Monday, my guests will be two very good Chicago actors indeed and directors, Byrne Piven and Joyce Piven, and they'll be reading and talking about their material at the Piven Workshop now at the in Evanston on the Noyes Center. They're performing, dramatizing five short stories, two of Chekhov, one of Faulkner, one of Joyce, and one of Isaac Bashevis, the singer. And so Monday, then, some of their readings and reflections. Until then, take it easy, but take it.
And Sunday night, by the way, Studs will rebroadcast his recent interview with Dr. Kostas Tsipis, who is a nuclear physicist from MIT. You've been listening to Studs Terkel, who is heard on WFMT every weekday from 10 a.m. to 11, and Sunday nights at 10:30. Transmitting from atop the John Hancock Center in Chicago, this is WFMT, 98.7 FM. The sensitive collaboration of violin, cello, and piano. That is the fare for the Continental Bank Concert, live from WFMT, Tuesday. The American Chamber Trio, Peter Baskin, June DeForest, and Daniel Morgenstern, present piano trios by Mendelssohn and Ravel, plus Kodály's duo for violin and cello at 7 p.m. Tuesday on the Continental Bank Concert, live from WFMT. You're invited to a belated birthday party. Celebrate George Washington's birthday anniversary this weekend at the Midwest Postage Stamp and Coin Show at the Palmer House. 65 prominent dealers will be buying and selling rare stamps and coins, and there will be colorful exhibits commemorating Washington's 250th birthday. Show cards and special cancellations will be available also. It's a big hobby event for collectors and investors. The Midwest Stamp and Coin Show, now through Sunday at the Palmer House. Between now and noon, we've scheduled two symphonies by Shostakovich on WFMT. They are the two symphonies by that composer that came immediately before and after the Second World War. We begin with the Symphony No. 6 in B minor, Opus 54, first performed in 1939. It's played by the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Pavel Berivan.
It's gonna get crazy, baby, if you don't stop. Someone could lose a heart tonight. Someone could lose a heart.
Chicago's newest FM, US 99, four great songs in a row for you. Once again, Eddie Rabbit, Somebody Could Lose a Heart Tonight. That's a good song. Johnny Duncan before that with Stranger. Crystal Gayle, her newest. Good song, You Never Gave Up on Me. And we started things off this set with Waylon Jennings. Ain't Living Long Like This. 229 in Chicago. This is Steve Kelly, and the weather forecast is dismal. It's dreary, and it's terrible. We're going to check it right after this.
It's here. Ones for the Money from the Daily Herald, the number one newspaper in the Northwest suburbs.
Ones for the Money?
That's right. Ones for the Money from the Daily Herald. Every week, we're offering up to $30,000 in cash prizes.
$30,000?
Every week in the Daily Herald.
So how do I win?
It's easy. Every day, the Daily Herald will publish current, authenticated, and locally distributed $1 bill serial numbers. If you've got a dollar bill that matches a number in the Daily Herald, you could win $50, $500, $1,000. Up to $30,000 in cash prizes available each week.
So all I have to do is check my dollar bills and compare them with the numbers printed in the Daily Herald?
It's that easy. The Daily Herald is the one newspaper for Northwest suburban and national news, current advertised values, and more. And now it's the one for the money. There's no questions to answer, no entry blanks to fill out.
Hey, the Daily Herald is the one for the money.
$30,000 available every week in the Ones for the Money game, now in the Daily Herald.
May be examined free of charge at local libraries.
Thank you. Till Eulenspiegel, Opus 28 of Richard Strauss. We heard the NBC Symphony Orchestra, led by Arturo Toscanini. That recording was made November 4th, 1952. For window ideas you won't find elsewhere this spring, come to Scandinavian Design's Custom Shop at 920 North Michigan. You'll find draperies with the light, airy, traditional look and texture of hand-loomed lace in 19 contemporary patterns. These draperies are called Swedish burnouts, a name derived from the process used to burn away the unwanted portion of the fabric, leaving a characteristically delicate and airy pattern. For a limited time, Swedish burnouts are available from the Custom Shop at double savings. First is a rare 20% discount on these custom-made draperies. Second is the inclusion of the popular Rocklon thermal suede lining at no additional cost, lining to protect draperies from water spotting and to save on heating and air conditioning expenses. Elegant Swedish burnout draperies at 20% savings plus thermal suede lining only through Saturday, April 15th and only at the Custom Shop upstairs at Scandinavian Design, 920 North Michigan. The Goodman Theater announces a very special event. For the first time ever, the flying Karamazov brothers and Avner the eccentric combine their wits and skills in an all-new extravaganza of zany comedy, juggling, acrobatics, and cheap theatrics entitled Welcome to Our Living Room. The Goodman invites you to bring your family and friends to this entertainment on the main stage for 8 performances only, Tuesday through Sunday, April 11th. For tickets and information, telephone 443-3800. Major credit cards are accepted. The Goodman Theater is on Columbus Drive at Monroe. One last Richard Strauss tone poem, Death and Transfiguration, Opus 24. This monophonic recording features the Vienna Philharmonic under the direction of Wilhelm Furtwängler.